Welcome to Countdown to Eternity, the weekly prophecy update from Pastors James Cadiz and Don Stewart. Together, they look at what's going on in the world today and show us it's precisely what the Bible says the world will look like in the last days. The Temple Mount is once again in the headlines, and today we start things off with an interesting ruling that affects Jews worshiping or praying openly on the Mount.
Well, everybody, it's another wonderful time for us to get together and talk about some of the most important stuff happening in this world. I am super honored to be here yet once again for another episode of Countdown to Eternity. We are tremendously thrilled by what God has been doing through this ministry. And I am here with the great Don Stewart, and he has a lot of stuff for us today. So let's just jump right into it. Don, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, James. It's always a blessing to be with you and to be with the people. Can't wait for this day when we record the program on Mondays. Of course, we let people know that in case something monumental happens. They go, hey, how come you guys aren't talking about this? It's Wednesday. Well, we need to let them know that. We have no secrets with our crowd. Okay, last Wednesday, we thought we had a huge story, and that was there was a court case in Israel where there was a man who prayed silently on the Temple Mount. The police got him, busted him, and the judge said, no, that was wrong. It's okay to pray silently on the Temple Mount. Now, I don't think people recognize how huge that was, this huge court decision, because since 1967, since Israel liberated the Temple Mount in June of 67, 10 days later, they gave the custodianship back to Islam, which they've had ever since. The Jews cannot, on the Temple Mount, pray out loud. They can't pray silently. Christians can't pray, can't have a Bible open or anything like that, because the custodianship belongs to the Islam, the Waqf, they're called from Jordan. Well, anyway, this ruling started the ball rolling, it seems, to change all this. It was incredible because this hasn't been true since 1967. I mean, before 67, they couldn't even go on the Temple Mount. However, Friday, what happens? A court reinstates the police ban on the Jewish man who prayed on the Temple Mount 2 days later. They were so afraid, James. They were so bothered by all this. The Jerusalem District Court, after the police minister, Omar Bar-Leb, appealed a magistrate's decision on the case. And so basically, the Jews are now again barred from worshiping openly on the Mount. Only Muslims are permitted to pray. You can't even mouth a prayer, and you can't even say it silently, because otherwise you will get arrested, as happened. And so what it points out to me, James, number one, this is going to continue to happen. Sooner or later, there'll be open prayer on the Temple Mount. They'll build a temple. We know that. But it marks something we've talked about here. We talked about it last year. We can't overemphasize this enough. A year ago, we had a superpower in the Middle East. We had a strong Israeli government. We had Russia in second place. We had Iran, basically, you know, on the back foot, you know, trying to enrich uranium to weapons grade. None of this is true today. And particularly we have Israel, where you see something like this happen. Now, again, we want freedom of worship on the Mount. We know there's going to be a temple built. We're not going to help build it. We're not going to have anything to do with it. It's a Jewish cause, but still it will be built in unbelief of Jesus. But the fact that they would backpedal with something like this shows the lack of leadership, not only in Israel, but also the lack of leadership here. I like your thoughts.
Oh, 100%. And it is interesting. I had almost predicted, although I didn't say anything, I had expected for the magistrate court ruling to be overturned. As I explained in one of the videos that I made last week, the magistrate court is the lowest court in the land.
Right.
Of course, it is very easy to overturn any decisions that are made there. But what is interesting is the capitulation that they continue to have towards the international community, especially after the statements made by, of course, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, many other nations. I was a bit surprised with Saudi Arabia's statement. It actually wasn't their official statement. They were people that were popular in Saudi Arabia that were making that statement. I don't believe that the royal family of Saudi Arabia actually chimed in on the whole thing. But what is very interesting is this. I'm not really focusing on the decision or the overturning of the decision. What I'm really focusing on, I think we talked about this before, is the lack of violent response that we would normally see over something like this. It's very interesting to me how this did not spark a riot. It's very interesting to me how this did not spark any type of a missile being fired by Hezbollah or by Hamas. And what's even more interesting to me is the fact that I think what we're watching here is a bit of an Overton window that I think is sort of just continuing to be pushed here. In other words, what's happening is we are we are witnessing right now, especially on the Temple Mount and in Jerusalem, with respect to the politics associated with all of that, we are witnessing Israel pushing the door just a little forward, right? Maybe not Israel as a whole, maybe activists from within Israel. They're literally pushing the envelope and they're getting away with pushing it a little further. So this is something that we look at because I think that this is sort of the preparing, sort of the preparation, the gateway into what we know is going to eventually happen on the Temple Mount. And that is, of course, they will be very open in their worship of God. They'll be conducting animal sacrifice and the temple will actually be reinstituted. And I very much take on your view. When the temple worship and all of that is reinstituted, it'll be located right on the Golden Dome, right there where my little finger is. You know, I think it'll be right in that same spot. And so it's just interesting. And it is also, it's not a surprise that Al-Aqsa, that mosque is the one that they hold a lot more holy, believe it or not, than what we would call in Haram al-Sharif, which is that immediate area where you see the Golden Dome. So I just think that they're making the way for the rebuilding of this temple. I think this is one news story that was remarkably significant for that reason.
Yeah, I agree. And again, just to remind the people, on the website that your church has built for me, that it's free, educatingourworld.com, my book, The Jews, Jerusalem, The Coming Temple, goes into great detail about the whole subject, about the two temples in the past, the coming temple, the whole Temple Mount, where it's going to be located and the such like. And you're right there. The issue is Al-Aqsa, the mosque, that was for years and years the only holy site on the Mount. The Dome of the Rocks is a shrine. It's a memorial to somebody. It wasn't a holy site. It was about two decades ago where they decided the whole Temple Mount is holy. But previously, it hadn't been considered holy, just the Al-Aqsa Mosque there. It became, basically the 19th century, the third holiest site in all Islam. But when you mentioned Saudi Arabia, remember, we've had stories out of there that there are people that are arguing that Al-Aqsa, where Muhammad supposedly ascended to heaven, is not in Jerusalem, it's in Saudi Arabia. And right. I think they've got a better case for that too, actually, the historical case. But be that as it may, still, Jerusalem is still the flashpoint, and they're using it as something to, just in front of the world community to show how mean and evil the Jews supposedly are. But I just thought it just was interesting. It reminds the people again, which we always say, James, the Temple Mount is always going to be in the headlines. It continues to be. It is God's timepiece. Israel, the nation, is the hour hand. Jerusalem is the minute hand, but the Temple Mount is the second hand. According to Daniel 9:27 and Matthew 24:15, it'll be center stage for events that'll take place. It'll bring in Christ's return the second time. So anyway, I thought that was an interesting story. It didn't last real long, but I'm not surprised it didn't. Like you said, the magistrate's court is the lowest one there. But the fact that even someone could say that is, to me, really, really something special.
Yeah, and one thing that I think is worthwhile mentioning too is the appellate in the case is not, you know, an Arab sect or some sort of an Arab community. The appellant in the case, which blows my mind, is the Israeli police.
Exactly.
Which is very interesting to me. I think it's unique, but I understand where that is, and I think it kind of has to be that way in order for us to see what we know is going to happen in the future. So I think it's all unique in that vein, but it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the police have, from day one, have always been against any prayer on the Temple Mount because they're worried about a riot. The threats were made by, you know, a number of countries. They didn't have time to shoot off a missile or something because, again, the police appealed that and it got turned around. Okay, speaking of Israel, this story here. Now, this goes to say, James, which we've been talking about since January 20th of this year. This story from Debka File. U.S. shifts towards accepting Assad regime. Israel is caught unawares. Now, remember, when Bennett's new government came into play, the first thing that they said, we're not going to do anything in the Middle East without letting you know first, United States. There are going to be no surprises as far as we're concerned. We will bend to you. And yet the U.S. doesn't seem to reciprocate, does it? It's upending its decade-long policy of condemnation of the Assad regime. A senior official revealed this week, although the Biden administration itself may not be welcoming Assad back into the fold with open arms. It has clearly left open the door for others to do so, said the official, will not act to prevent or reverse U.S. allies re-engaging with normalizing Assad's regime. And immediately, again, we've got people like Jordan, King Abdullah knocking on the door. But to me, it again shows the lack of, you know, what I just said. A year ago, we had a superpower that existed. It had Israel's back. It was strong in the Middle East. We don't exist as a superpower anymore. We certainly don't have Israel's back. And voila, here is the story that proves it.
Well, and I think it's appropriate to point out something critical about this that a lot of people aren't going to see. I know you see it like the back of your hand and a few others that are really studying this. But here's the thing that's critical with this story. The interaction of the United States with respect to Assad and the stand that they take in Syria isn't the significant variable that gets us to bring up our antennas. What gets us to bring up our antennas is the fact that I would bet my life. If I had to bet, I would bet my life, and I'd bet the whole farm, even though I don't own a farm, the fact that the position that the United States has recently taken with respect to Syria, and specifically Assad, is at the hand of Putin pressuring Biden. I'm almost certain of that. There's no other way that they're going to change their stand on it, especially because you have to understand that even though Putin wanted to pressure Obama initially to kind of ease up on Assad during the time that things were going on with Israel and Syria, it was very obvious that as demonic and evil as Obama was, he did not like Assad for whatever reason. Now, don't get me wrong, he wasn't a hardliner with him, but he was most definitely somebody that didn't really like him. So he didn't buckle to the pressure that I think Putin was trying to put on him. Now, we have evidence of the fact that there was this kind of pressure being put on him because there was things going on with the Ukraine and a few other nations that were surrounding, where if you remember that open mic moment, that hot mic moment where Obama basically had told one of the generals of Putin, hey, just tell Vladimir to give me some time. I need some time. And as soon as I get past this election, I'll totally take care of him. He said something to that effect. But it is interesting because this story, and this is so significant that I actually did a video on this.
Oh, really?
I did it yesterday. And it is interesting to consider the fact that this is significant only because of the interaction with Russia. Russia, it's a big deal with Russia.
Yeah, and you're right. That was the open mic with Medvedev, the president of Russia at that time when Obama was still president. And you're right. And it goes to show, again, it points out what I talked about the initial thing. The U.S. not only isn't a superpower, doesn't have Israel's back, but Russia is the big player in the Middle East now. Recall, it was, a couple months ago when Putin and Biden had that meeting, and right afterwards, there were rockets shot towards Syria, and the Russian missile defenses shot them down. And the word was, well, they're allowed to do it because in the meeting with Biden, Biden didn't seem to care, you know, if Israel was thwarted from taking out some of its enemies there in Syria, such as the Iranian, you know, their armaments there, their terrorists there. And Israel, again, is just defending itself, defending against many times preemptive attacks. But you're right, James, what it is, the fact that they would say this without telling Israel tells us that they really don't care what Israel thinks, what it says, right. But they are beholden to Russia. And we've talked about before why this is the case, but it's very, very sad and very, very telling, but very damning for our country, because last I looked, Genesis 12:3 is 1-3 still in the Bible. God's going to bless those that bless and curse those that curse. So this doesn't bode well for the United States of America.
No, not one bit. And I also believe, and you hit on it right now, I believe the unilateral action that we are watching right now, and this is very significant to see, the unilateral action that we're watching right now with respect to the United States and Syria, void of any consideration of Israel, I think is happening because the Biden regime is putting a lot of faith in Putin handling the position with Israel. So I think they're doing this unilaterally with Syria only because of the fact that they have confidence that their position with Israel is going to still be maintained, rectified, whatever you want to call it, because of the relationship that Putin has with Bennett right now and the kind of peacemaking process, if you want to call it that. It's a pseudo-peace. It's a let me boss you around and we'll all be at peace kind of relationship that's going on. So like you said, the big game player here is Russia. They're the winner in all of this.
Indeed, it is. The United States is the loser. We're the losers because of our back turn on Israel. Now, there's another story, James, that is, again, beyond huge. It's been in a few publications. And that is this week, it was the 110th anniversary of the mainland of the Zhihai Revolution. Xi Jinping, they had a week-long celebration, basically said, now it's time to reunify all of China. And basically, in no uncertain terms, he said, we are going to take Taiwan and put it back in the fold of China. We're going to bring it back where it's supposed to be. And he actually made a threat that we're going to, whether militarily or whatever, the mainland government of China is going to be soon, according to Xi Jinping, or his musings, is going to be, taking over Taiwan. Now, we've talked about planes that have been flying there the last couple of weeks, ships in the area, threatening. And, here again, I don't see a whole lot of pushback from the United States. This would never have happened if President 45, Mr. Trump, was in office, if he wouldn't get away for 1 second saying something like this. But then again, what do we get from the U.S. on this? We got nothing, no leadership, nada, zero, zilch.
Yeah, 100%. And we do know this. Look, make no mistake about it. You can see it right now that China, specifically what we're seeing coming out of Beijing, they are preparing for unilateral action with Taiwan. We know that, right? And I don't think the international community is really bracing for it, which is more evidence of the fact that we're going to continue to see some kind of a move against China. I think China's already being prepared to be scapegoated. Their economic standing is getting worse and worse and worse by the moment, right? Their power has peaked, for lack of a better term, right? And so lots of things are actually going on. We know the changes that are going on with the GDP in China. We know the contributions that are being made through the lack of financial clarity that's happening even amongst the CCP. And we're creating a bunch of trigger points. A bunch of them. And the United States of America is literally fueling that. We are literally putting fuel into that fire.
Yeah. And there's another story here. I don't know if you've seen this one. This is one, if you haven't done a video on, you need to, we could talk about it more at length. It's from the Epoch Times. Which war is Beijing preparing for? It's very, very interesting what's going on here. Because one of the things we've said, James, we made it very clear, China and the United States are not players of the last days. Could this be what takes place now? They're supposedly military and naval experts conclude Beijing plans to use commercial transport ships to transport 2 million soldiers to a Taiwan invasion. But beyond that, this article goes on to talk about the problems involved with both Japan and the United States. Japan's pacifist foreign policy, and now the United States turning its back. But one of the issues here, why it's so important, Taiwan provides more than 50% of the world's semiconductors. We cannot have that in the hands of communist China, can we? No, we shouldn't. I said, but in this world we're at now, who knows, right?
Yep. And when we talk about the global supply chain being dramatically affected, this is the ultimate catch-22 right here. This ends up becoming a significant problem for us. And again, the bottom line is, no matter how you want to look at it, China is definitely going down, right? Yeah. We see that. It's clear evidence. The question is how fast we want to go down with them. I mean, that's really the big issue. And I think we're headed pretty fast, if not faster. Yeah.
It's funny, we've said that. The story starts like this. It's no secret that Beijing is preparing for war. One of the main reasons is China's cratering economy. You saw what happened today. In the stock market in China. It was a holiday here in the U.S., Columbus Day. But sell. And their economy is indeed cratering, isn't it?
Oh, unbelievably. And the sign in the stock market that we've been watching, oh my goodness. And I haven't had a chance to look at the futures for tomorrow's market opening, but I bet you the futures are just horrendous. Any of the futures that are tied to commodities or stocks that are associated either indirectly or directly with China, I bet you are going to tank tomorrow.
Yeah. Now, again, what does that mean for the United States? It means shortages. It means, not only lack of goods for Christmas, but lack of goods to, move the country forward. Semiconductors, this and that. We've seen that the lack of chips that are there that keeping used cars now are at a premium. You can't get a new car if you want one now in the U.S. Everything's backed up. If something like this happened, if China took over Taiwan, only God knows what would be the result of that. We'll see. I mean, there's a reason they're pushing this, not because they want to unify China, this great revolutionary field. They believe they need it because of how far their economy's cratering. But the key is, what will the U.S., what will Japan do, and what will some of the nations around do? Will they just sit on their hands? Or could this be the end of China? Because we know China and the U.S. are not players in last day's Bible prophecy. So something major seemingly has to happen. And this could be the beginning of it. We don't know.
Yeah. And there's so many aspects of this that are just remarkable. Yeah. So many aspects of this that just continue to show what we already know to be true. I think that reason why so many people in Bible prophecy have a difficult time with some of the things that we're saying about China becoming inconsequential in the last days, especially during the period that we know as the tribulation, is because years and years ago, and I don't know who was the first one to teach it, but when China announced that they had a 200 million man army, then everybody went crazy and said, oh, this is Revelation chapter 9. And then oftentimes they take Revelation chapter 9 and they conflate it with what they read in, I think, either 16 or 17.
And come
to these crazy conclusions that have nothing to do with one another. And so we've always looked at it and understood that to be China is going to be inconsequential. I don't associate the king of the East or the kings of the East with being China. I think that's a far-fetched because you're making too much assumption to come to that conclusion. We're talking either east of the Euphrates or east of Israel. We're not talking about anyway. That's a whole other issue.
No, but, and you're right. No, you're right, James. That's very important to us. You know, China's the Far East, Israel's the Middle East, but east of Israel is like Babylon. You know, it's right there.
That's right, 100%. 100%. I could not agree with you more. I could not agree with you more. So it is an interesting thing that's happening. We should not be surprised that China is taking the road that it's taking. It's not anything we did not expect to take place, but it is pretty unique. We've got about a minute. Do we have another minute to do another story before you do closing remarks?
Sure. It says 21:22 out here, so we got a minute or so. Okay. How about this story? Now, this one here, you got to do a video on this. Did you hear this? The British Medical Journal, that story. I don't know if you've heard this. BMJ, the British Medical Journal, think less of the health of their patients and more about the health of their planet. They did an editorial basically complaining that medical treatment contributes significantly to greenhouse gas emissions and from this, the carbon footprint. So what they need to do, health professionals need to reduce overdiagnosis and overtreatment because that's causing the demise of our planet.
Goodness gracious. I don't know how much more commentary to put on there other than to say this is satanic. Yeah. And we've been talking about how they're using this to kind of continue on with this sort of catch-all, blame-all. That's what they're doing with the subject of climate change. And it's getting uglier and uglier and uglier by the moment. It is really evil.
Yeah, and one of the stories, I don't know if we did last week, we had, is that there was a government leader saying, well, we're not going to let this go to waste once the virus and that kind of, you know, it's not so taking effect of everything. We're going to use the power that we have of control and keep controlling the people. And the next big thing will be because of climate change. And so we'll start putting things in place and make the people do X, Y, and Z for their own health, just like we did with the lockdowns, because we're so used now to the power. You can see it, James. We're used to the power we have. We can tell people what to do. So this is the next step. Now, this was not surprising. It wasn't rocket science to figure that out, but we knew it was coming, didn't we?
100%, bro. 100%. Well, we are out of time. I cannot believe how fast this went. Don, I'm going to give you about 45 seconds for closing comments. What say you?
Okay. In all of this, basically what we're doing, people, if you've been listening to Countdown to Eternity each week or however long, we're just showing you that the events taking place in the world fit precisely what the Bible says the world will look like in the last days, the last time. The lineup of nations is just practically almost all there. And it's ready to, you know, explode. Now, again, we're telling you this because God has spoken to us. And the key is, are we listening? The God of all eternity says he knows the future. He's in control of the future. He's told us these things. And we're held responsible for it. So if you're not a Christian today, the time to believe in Jesus is right now because the facts are there. And if you are a Christian, I hope you're paying attention to all that's going on because there's some exciting things happening that have never happened before that were predicted to happen. And here we see him right now in front of our eyes. James, you can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't. And it's exciting stuff. What a thrilling time for us to be living in. Well, folks, that's it. I cannot believe the time has gone by this quick. I know very much so how blessed we are. We hope you guys are as blessed as we are blessed when we make this with you guys listening to it. It is such a blessing. We love you guys. On behalf of the great Don Stewart, this is James Cadiz, and we want to thank you for joining us for another episode of Countdown to Eternity. May God richly bless you, and may you keep your eyes on him. He's coming soon.
This is Countdown to Eternity with James Cadiz and Don Stewart. Thanks for hanging out with us. If you'd like to share what you heard with a friend, just point them to countdowntoeternity.com. That's countdown, the number two, eternity.com. And it's available wherever you get your podcasts. Have you seen the video version of Countdown to Eternity? We're on YouTube and Rumble. Subscribe to the Calvary Chapel Signal Hill channel to watch us on YouTube, and on Rumble, you'll find us under James Cadiz. Don Stewart has written a number of books, and you just heard him make reference to one of them titled The Jews, Jerusalem, and the Coming Temple. You can download this and many other books for free at educatingourworld.com. Again, educatingourworld.com. There is so much going on right now that we couldn't possibly cover it all in a half-hour weekly show. So we'd like to recommend that you follow James Cadiz, Educating Our World, and Countdown to Eternity on Instagram and Facebook. And again, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Calvary Chapel Signal Hill. Have a question or comment you'd like to share with James and Don? We'd love to hear from you. Just email us through the website at countdowntoeternity.com. Countdown, the number two, eternity.com. And we are listener-supported. Your gifts help to make this show possible, and we're grateful for it. To make a donation, visit countdowntoeternity.com. That'll do it for this edition of Countdown to Eternity with James Cadiz and Don Stewart. Thanks again for listening, and God bless. This program is brought to you by Calvary Chapel, Signal Hill.